Hey friends, you're tuning into Wisdom and Wellness with Wit, a podcast for your emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, a space to learn and grow, to be encouraged and maybe even challenged just a little bit. Let's journey together and explore what it means to experience the wholeness God has for each of our lives. Hey, what's up, everybody? Hope you're having a great day. Today's interview is one that I am very honored that I got to have with Dan Buglio, who is a leading voice in the mind-body syndrome community and conversation. He has helped so many people, and I found him on YouTube. He has a channel called Pain for You, and they're just these simple videos. They're like 10-minute videos every day that just really help to like educate as well as help us kind of walk through our own process of understanding this beautiful process of what our brains and our bodies navigate and go through, and just understanding some of the science a little bit more and just how to live a life that feels like it has more joy and freedom from a life with chronic pain. I think for those of us who have lived with pain for so long, we've learned to solely think about it all the time, 24/7, everything that we do in life has to do with the amount of pain that we are in or are not in, or protecting ourselves from what could bring pain, all of this stuff that's just an exhausting, chained way to live. Like, there's just no freedom in that. And so Dan just really gives a great perspective. At the end, we kind of get into some coaching, just one-on-one with me. And it's a little vulnerable, but I just decided to keep it because, you know, my whole goal and prayer and all of this is to illuminate this topic that has helped bring just so much healing for me, as well as it's a journey that I am still on. Healing is not linear. Healing is in every aspect of life, right? Like, we're just learning how to grow day by day, inch by inch. And so I'm just really thankful for him. You know, when it comes to these mind-body conversations, I just always want to remind us that, you know, as a believer, I have no issues with the mind-body science and conversation and faith. I feel like it just has deepened and enriched my faith when it comes to understanding the way that God created our brains and our bodies. And so that means that I'll have guests who don't necessarily have the same convictions as me. But when it comes to talking about the brain and the body and the science of what it means to learn how to live pain-free, I really think that you'll find just some really good nuggets for yourself in this. Also, you know, if you've been following along, just like in any other topic, there's so many people in the mind-body community who don't necessarily have the exact same perspective as one another. And so you might notice that today's interview, he says some things that might sound a little bit different than my conversation with Dr. Dan Ratner or with Rose. And so I just encourage you to cling to the nuggets that you feel have to do with you. And then things that maybe don't, just don't even worry about it. I think sometimes we can get caught up in the way that somebody does something. And we've talked about this before here on this podcast about bio-individuality. Each one of us is our own individual, and there are things that, you know, will relate to us more than it does to somebody else. And then there's things that we'll hear and be like, I don't think that's for me. And that's great. Take what is for you. Take what you feel like the Holy Spirit drops into your heart. And so that's just my hope as you listen to this conversation. And before we get into it, disclaimer. This podcast episode is for educational and informational purposes only. This is not medical advice. I am not a medical doctor, psychiatrist, or therapist, nor am I trying to be. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for health and medical care that can be provided by your own physician, medical doctor, or mental health provider, nor is it intended to be used to diagnose or treat any condition. Always seek medical counsel relating to your specific health needs with any questions or concerns you may have, especially before starting any treatment plan, fitness regimen, adding supplements, changing or quitting medication, or making any lifestyle, mental health, or dietary changes. Any suggestion or recommendation mentioned on this podcast is to be taken at your own risk.
All right.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for being with me today. I'm very honored and excited because I'm a big fan of you and your work. So I really appreciate you hanging out with me today and talking some of this mind-body stuff.
All right. My pleasure, Whitney.
Yes. So I know it's probably a bit redundant, and I know you've talked about it a little bit, but can you just start us off just your journey into getting into the mind-body space and your journey with healing for yourself?
Well, it started 24 years ago, 25 years ago, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
Bending over to put on my underwear, first episode of acute back pain. So that was how my journey started. Up and down for about a year, traditional methods, muscle relaxers, chiropractic, nothing significant on x-ray. Just, you know, the typical route of trying to deal with it. And it would, you know, it went away after a couple months, but then it would come back, and then it would go away again, and then it would come back. And about a year into it, I heard Howard Stern, radio talk show host, talking about Dr. Sarno. And so that was my introduction to the mind-body world, if you will.
Yeah.
And that started the journey. So read Dr. Sarno's book, got well, but then it would come back. Mm-hmm. And that was the journey for literally like another 12 years. It would get slightly better, it would go away, it would get very much better and all good, and then it would come back. And you know, it was up and down journey. And after a while, it just became persistent. It wouldn't go away. It would like go up and down, big flares, but it would settle for a bit. But I just kind of learned to live with it. And as time progressed, I knew it was this thing that Dr. Sarno called TMS, or mind-body syndrome. But for whatever reason, I couldn't get it to dial down. And so that began a long journey of trying to figure it out. But back then, that long ago, there was no Facebook, YouTube, podcasts, no resources. It was before all of that kind of stuff. And it was mostly, you know, his 12 daily reminders. And there was one website when the internet first started happening. It was called tmshelp.com. And if you go look at it, it's still there. It's like an old fashioned bulletin board, you know, and people
are
talking about it. And that was the only online resource when the internet came about. And it took me about 13 years in total, 12 years of knowing about Dr. Sarno to get it dialed in and allow it to eventually go away. After that, I remained fascinated by it. I have a marketing background, so I always kind of thought, well, it would be really cool to teach this, write an ebook, do something to help people. But I didn't really get started with that until several years later. I started trying to do some coaching, and I went about it from the whole big, you know, let's do the high ticket price and let's help people and work with them till it's done. And nobody's got that money. You know, I was going to charge thousands of dollars, and nobody had the money to spend. Nobody knew who I was, so I didn't really have any credibility in the marketplace. And, you know, who's this guy charging all this money to help him get out of pain? Why would I give him money? I don't know who he is. So I had some fits and starts with the coaching process. And about 3.5 years ago, a good friend of mine was like, yeah, just shoot some daily videos, see what happens. And so 3.5 years later, I've been doing daily videos on Facebook and YouTube. And haven't missed a day since. I think I'm up over 1,280 some odd videos in a row. And they're anywhere from, you know, 6 to 12 to 20 minutes, depending on the day and the topic. And as a result of doing that, not only have I become more well-known for sure, but I've absolutely refined my message as to what works. Because when you have to teach something daily, and you do that for 3.5 years, and then you see all the comments that are coming back. And at that point, I started doing more one-on-one coaching. And I guess last June, a year ago, June, I started out with a group coaching program.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got so much feedback coming back to me from the marketplace as to what works, mm-hmm. what doesn't.
Yeah.
And so I now kind of feel like my approach is as simple as it can be.
Yeah.
And as accessible as any can be. It's not mm-hmm. overcomplicated. And I'm seeing success everywhere. People around the globe emailing mm-hmm. me, messaging me, leaving me success stories.
Yeah.
And so it's gone exceptionally well.
So yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, I found it on YouTube as well. And I found that, yeah, the way you talk about it, you definitely have simplified it in a way, because I think there's some, I've listened to a lot of people, and I go to a mind body therapist out of the Pain Psychology Center that Alan Gordon started.
Sure.
And so that's been, you know, immensely helpful. But yeah, I think that what I really appreciate about you is I've watched so many of your videos, and I watched one the other day where you were interviewing somebody who had throat pain. And while I know mm-hmm. all pain is the same,
it,
yeah. And that was just really, that was very impactful for me. I don't know why, just hearing somebody with a similar just place on the body, for some reason that just kind of resonated with me.
It does. It's mm-hmm. it makes me feel like, okay, well, if it can work for him, it can work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy if you've got throat pain to go, sure, that back pain story is just great, but
mm-hmm.
that's not what I have. So
mm-hmm.
you know, it's easy to go, but I'm different.
Right. So. Yeah. And I think your story was also very interesting because you talked about, like, you found sauna, but you were still kind of in pain for a while. And I'm on the journey of, getting, you know, certified in pain reprocessing therapy and kind of wanting to go in the coaching route. I don't know specifically if I want to do like to work, you know, person by person. I'm not totally sure. I'm just kind of, you know, digging in, 'cause as you find it, you know, you get passionate about it. So you want to pursue mm-hmm. it. But it is interesting, like talking about it a lot more and learning about it a lot more while still being, in a lot of pain when it comes to the throat area. It's interesting because every time I do interviews, for my podcast, I always get a migraine in the morning. And so I know what it is. Like, I totally know now. But it's still just really interesting, like, to observe yourself and just kind of see how your body navigates with your brain, all of this stuff. So it just continues to blow my mind. But, yeah. So, you know, when I think a lot of us hear about Dr. Sano at first, and it seems like kind of crazy, but then also like this actually makes a ton of sense. What do you find are some of the biggest obstacles people have to like truly believing it? Either they haven't gotten like a structural diagnosis, or they have gotten a structural diagnosis. Like, where do you find the disconnect can often come?
I think it depends on how it's explained to them.
Mm.
And unfortunately, one of the challenges that we have is that Dr. Sarno's explanation is all about repressed emotions.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start coming at somebody and going, oh, you've got pain? You know, there's this doctor and he talks about repressed emotions as the cause of your pain. And the first mm-hmm. thing they go is, I'm not crazy. My pain is real. What are you telling me? I'm psycho?
Right.
And so there's a disconnect there, whether you've got a mm-hmm. structural diagnosis or not.
Mm-hmm.
People are easily offended by the insinuation that this is psychological, that mm-hmm. you're imagining it. This, it's not, that couldn't be further from the truth. The pain is absolutely real.
Yeah.
It's absolutely significant. It's just not caused by a flaw in the body. So mm-hmm. if you've got a structural diagnosis, it's hard to let go of that
mm-hmm.
because since we were little, we were told, hey, the body causes pain, but it really doesn't. You know, the brain mm-hmm. always is in charge of the pain. And the concept I've been introducing probably for about 10 months now is perceived danger, pain mm-hmm. or symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And perceived danger could be emotional,
mm-hmm.
but it could also be physical movement. Could be I had a procedure and it hurt, and then the pain stuck around, and
mm-hmm.
so they messed up my procedure, and
Right.
There can be an infinite number of perceived dangers. And if the brain is perceiving a danger, pain or other symptoms are the warning signal.
Yeah.
Right. So it's challenging to introduce people to it who are still kind of stuck in the medical model.
Yeah.
And if they're told, hey, look, here's your MRI. Look right there. That's the problem. It's like, okay, great. Well, if it's physical and the doctor's an expert in physical treatments, how come none of the physical stuff helped yet?
Right.
Because even if there was a structural problem and even if the doctor fixed it, if you're still scared to death and you're perceiving danger, the brain's going to keep the pain going. And so I think it's a couple of different aspects, but if you're ever trying to explain mind body to people, you know, an easy way to get into it is like, yeah, you know, I'm learning that stress can cause pain. You ever have a stress headache? Yeah. Well, it can do it to your back too, or it can do it to your, you know, and this concept of if the brain's perceiving danger, it's going to warn you. I think that's much more introducible.
Yeah, to totally.
Then you're crazy. You know, you got repressed emotions.
Right.
And, you know, that's just like, what? Get out of here.
Yeah, for sure. Or well, like a doctor telling you, you should get on, you know, antidepressants or something. Because I had a lot of that. Like maybe clue. You just, you know. Yeah.
It's a clue, but the doctor doesn't know how to tell you why that's the case. I mean, he doesn't even understand why.
Right.
Totally. I think it's been told that, you know, there's like 5 days of time in medical school on chronic pain. It's like not a big portion of what they teach. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you were talking about, I think a lot of people who have been in pain, a lot of us have learned how to manage life being in pain. What is that communicating to our brain and nervous system as we're doing that?
Well, it depends where you're at. Never heard of this TMS, mind, body, perceived danger stuff. A lot of people will just learn to live with it.
Right.
And so learning to live with it is what most people do with chronic pain.
Right.
And they go to pain management.
The
cool part about this whole mind-body stuff that Dr. Sarno figured out and some other really smart doctors and pain scientists have figured out is that you don't have to just manage it. You can actually eliminate it. Because if the brain is perceiving danger, I always say in a lot of my videos, the only reason it's doing that is because it's operating on misinformation, meaning bad data, and fear.
Yeah.
And so if we fix the misinformation with better data, accurate knowledge about how the system of the human body works, how pain works, how the brain works, if we fix the misinformation, we can dial down the fear. And then when the fear is down, we can shift our attention away from the symptoms. And the brain goes, oh, look, Whitney's okay.
Right.
Right. Oh, look, there's no podcast today. We don't need a headache.
Yeah.
No danger. No, no threat.
Yeah.
And so it's great you made that connection because once you make the connection, if you start to feel the headache coming on in the morning, you can go, no. Brain, we're not doing that. I know what that is. There's nothing wrong.
Right.
I don't know how many podcasts you've done, but just tell the brain, it's just a podcast. We're just recording. We're not live streaming in front of a million people. We're recording. And if it goes bad, we hit delete, you know?
There's
no pressure. There's no danger. So what do you, come on, brain, relax. There's nothing there.
Yeah, totally. Well, and it's interesting too, because when I've started doing more about mind-body stuff, like you know, the sensations have gotten a lot worse. And like this, so this morning I was like, I had vertigo and it was just, so it was like interesting. And so like for that example, so I feel, you know, you're communicating safety to yourself. When do you find the balance of like communicating safety versus like, okay, there's some like emotional things I've repressed or maybe some current things that are triggering me. Like what's that balance of safety versus like emotional processing, if you will?
Yeah, so much of the TMS community, coaches, mm-hmm. therapists, doctors,
mm-hmm.
Is still leaning heavily on Dr. Sarno's emotional repression stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of people talking about, you know, childhood trauma and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And I think that may have been why pain started, an emotionally chaotic time, a breakup, mm-hmm. you know, finances, divorce, job loss, parent loss. And that may have been why it started, but
mm-hmm.
it's likely that happened years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, so many of us have become medicalized, meaning traumatized by the medical system. Oh, look, mm-hmm. look at the MRI. Or, you know, we don't have a cure for you, so you're going to live this way for the rest of your life. Right. And all the horrible things people have been told.
Mm-hmm.
And so we become traumatized by the medical system. And then we expect the pain. It's there. It hurts. And so, you know, it just becomes part of who we are. We expect mm-hmm. it. We live with mm-hmm. it. We're afraid of it. We hate it. And all of that negative energy feeds this mm-hmm. perception of danger. And mm-hmm. as long as the brain's perceiving danger, it's going to keep on sounding the warning signal called pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't in pain for 13 years due to the emotional stuff that was going on when it started.
Mm.
So I'm one of the few that really says, yeah, I don't know that we have to dig up the past.
Okay.
I'm not sure I had all that pain for 13 years because of something that happened in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
When I got a bad report card, maybe my dad, you know, spanked me. Like, I just don't know if it's relevant. If perceived danger is what causes pain and keeps it going,
mm-hmm.
my whole approach is how do I teach the brain that right now
mm-hmm.
there's no danger.
Mm.
And I'm not sure for a lot of people that going back and doing this emotional work mm-hmm. and trauma work and digging up every horrible thing that they've ever experienced emotionally
mm-hmm.
does anything to teach their right now brain that they're safe.
Gotcha.
In some cases, you know, it can flare things up.
Yeah.
And so I don't recommend therapy. I don't recommend against it, but it's not mm-hmm. part of my approach. Mm-hmm. I don't recommend journaling. You mm-hmm. know, it's bad. It's just not what I tell my coaching clients to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tried those things. Actually, I didn't try therapy, but I tried the journal.
Yeah.
It was never part of the cure.
Mm.
I never got better by journaling, just mm-hmm. like I don't teach meditation or somatic tracking mm-hmm. or breath work, because none of those things that I had experimented with were part of my cure. Mm. So in my opinion, trauma work may be very beneficial for certain people.
Yeah.
If they've got a lot of trauma. Mm-hmm. But I'm not convinced you've got to do that to get better from your TMS mind-body symptoms.
Mm.
If you can teach your right now brain that you're safe now mm-hmm. and the trauma's not happening now mm-hmm. and my body's not broken and I don't need to fear it and that movement is safe, well then why do we got to go dig up the skeletons? So it's a very differing thing between me and many of the other practitioners.
Yeah.
And if you read Alan Gordon's book,
mm-hmm.
The Way Out, wonderful book, he doesn't talk about journaling. He doesn't talk about deep emotional work. What does he talk mm-hmm. about? Safety.
Yeah.
Right? And so mm-hmm. it's interesting that he and I are very tightly aligned, mm-hmm. even though he's a therapist.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So, you know, I'm not convinced there's this needle in a haystack that we've got to go find.
Yeah, I get that. Because it can definitely make you feel like there is a, I think for me, you know, I started out, you know, going to regular doctors. And then I also had, you know, fibromyalgia, you know, all of those kinds of labels as well. So then it's like you go to the functional. Label.
You don't have fibromyalgia because it's a medical definition, not a disease. And some people are going to come through the screen at me and go, are you crazy? It's a disease and it's not curable. And Dan's an evil person for saying that.
Right.
But you don't have fibromyalgia. Please stop labeling yourself that way.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's
because
good.
Your brain hears you're talking about, I have fibromyalgia. Well, yeah, that's a scary thing because your brain's made the connection to all the crappy stuff you've read on the internet and been told and heard that they don't know what causes it and there's no cure. So why would you possibly want to identify that that's what's going on with you? No, you have TMS. You have mind-body syndrome in multiple places of your body. Your brain's perceiving danger and you have a bunch of symptoms. That's all that's going on. I will encourage you to drop the labels. Seriously, please.
No, that's good. That is good. Yes. I don't claim to still have it. But no, that makes sense. I think, you know, like going on the hunt of like normal medical doctors and then to functional medical doctors, you know, spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on treatments and IVs and diets and, you know, everything, you know, to try to get better. So I can see the, how it, you can still stay in that mindset when it comes to TMS work as well. Cause it's like, okay, maybe if I just, and I have, I definitely can do this sometimes, like, okay, if I journal enough, if I meditate enough, if I, you know, really make sure I can reiterate the science enough, some, any of that, then that's when I will, you know, the last missing piece is going to fall or whatever. So, I totally get that. And I think maybe it's personality driven. I don't know, but,
well, we're fixers. Human beings are fixers. I have a problem. I need to fix it.
Yeah.
Sarno said, you know, perfectionists are people who are prone to TMS. And so when we learn about this TMS thing, we go, okay, cool. I've got my answer. I'm going to do this perfectly. I'm going to get it done so fast. I'm going to do so much of it. And people make a full-time job of it. And what are they doing? All day long, they're doing what I call fixing activities. Whether it be journaling, therapy, meditation, breath work, listening to podcasts, watching videos, reading books. And it's like 100% about recovery. And all their brain's going is saying, wow, look at all Whitney's doing to fix a problem. There must be a problem. So we better stay vigilant up here because we got a problem. So the brain's perceiving danger and staying in that fixing mode over and over and over again, the brain perceiving that we got a problem because why else would you be doing all this weird stuff?
Right.
If there wasn't a problem, right? And so my approach is, I agree with Dr. Sarno. He used to dismiss people from his office in New York City by saying, there's nothing wrong with you. Go live your life.
Yeah.
Literally. That's how he would end a consult with a client. And so my answer is, relax. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken physically, mentally, or emotionally. There's nothing to fix. And I like the joke to say, you know, if you had a brand new car sitting in the garage, how much time would you spend working on it if it's working perfectly already? The goal is to teach yourself and your stubborn subconscious brain that you're actually okay. And I don't even like that I said that. Your brain's not stubborn. Its primary job is safety and survival. And it's our job to convince it that we're actually okay and we're safe and there's nothing wrong. There's nothing to fix. And when the brain comes to believe that, things settle down.
Yeah, so you talk a lot about communicating safety to our brain and nervous system. What are some ways that you recommend communicating safety?
Well, it can be anything. You know, a lot of people say, Dan, I'm telling myself I'm safe every day. I'm telling myself 1,000 times a day, I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe. My brain's not believing it. My body's not believing it. And so it's not just about telling yourself you're safe. It's not. It's about showing your brain that you're safe. If you're walking around tense and tight, and I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe, your brain's going, you don't look safe. What are you talking about? Why do you look so freaked out? Where's the tiger in the room, right? And so I think it's really important to show the brain that we're safe. And I think there we have to learn about TMS, understand the concept of what's happening, how this human body, brain, nervous system, pain works. But then we have to teach it to the subconscious. And even Dr. Sarno, you know, published a poem from somebody, something along the lines, I'll paraphrase, that what the brain, conscious brain, can quickly learn, mm-hmm. the subconscious is slow to accept.
Mm.
So the subconscious needs a little bit more convincing.
Yeah.
You can't just tell the brain, hey, I'm okay, turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, if I can look at my hand, I can't say, all right, brain, make it hurt. Try it. It doesn't work.
Right.
You can't turn on pain. It's not controlled by the conscious thinking brain. Mm-hmm. So I don't care how many books you read or how many podcasts you listen to and how many videos you watch.
Mm-hmm.
Great. You've got the intellectual knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell yourself, okay, throat, stop hurting. Body, stop mm-hmm. hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Not within conscious control. The best you can do is hope to influence the subconscious, which is controlling it all, by consistent messages of safety. So, answer your question. It can be thinking, acting, and behaving as if you're okay. That does not involve journaling for an hour a day and meditating for 2 hours a day and breath work for 6 hours a day and spending all this time fixing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, waking up and saying, how can I have some fun today? What can I do today?
Mm-hmm.
Can I listen to some fun music? Can I go on a walk? Can I, you know, do a drawing? Can I watch silly cat videos? I don't know. It can be anything. Yes, meditation can be a tool to teach yourself you're safe. A lot of people like that. But I had a guy once say, Dan, do I need to meditate? I was like, well, if you didn't ever have pain, would you be meditating? He goes, oh, heck no. I said, then don't do it now. Because I would try that. I would try to meditate. And every time I'd get done, I would say, did it work? Darn it. No, it didn't work. Maybe I need to meditate differently or better or longer. So that's the whole overachiever mentality that says, I haven't gotten it dialed in yet. I need to do more. Sometimes you need to do less because spending all this time trying to heal this wonderful human body that it's probably already okay. You just have a brain that's perceiving danger, that's perceived, not actual, and it's firing off the alarm signals called symptoms or pains. And it doesn't need to. So messages of safety can be anything you find joyful. Not sitting there reading about TMS and thinking about how I can fix it and how come it hasn't worked yet. That's not a message of safety. That's a message that says, I got a big problem. So I do have a video called 24 Examples, Messages of Safety. And there's a bunch of them. I don't really want to list through them. And frankly, I don't remember all of them, but it can be anything from singing to laughing to walking to sitting in nature to catching some sunshine to calling a friend to anything besides fixing yourself.
And do you say that to those who are in like severe pain as well as like not quite as severe pain? Because I could, you know, I think when you're in like intense pain, looking for something fun would feel like not fun. You know, you know what I mean?
So let's talk about happiness and fun.
Yeah.
When you are in intense pain, your brain is in survival mode. You're in the fight or flight much of the time. And people will say to me, Dan, I don't get it. I don't smile. I don't laugh. I don't remember the last time I had fun. And you're telling me to have some fun. And I don't even know what that looks like anymore. Right? But keep it in mind, if your brain's primary job is safety and survival, where is fun and happiness on the priority list? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
It's just not. So if your brain is trying to make sure you survive and stay alive, fun's not a priority. Happiness isn't a priority. But you can still find peace. If you're laying in bed racked with pain, you can either lay there catastrophizing, telling your family to start shopping for the wheelchair and worrying that this is the rest of your life, or you can kind of do your best, you know, I'll say that very specifically, do your best with where you are to calmly reassure yourself that this is temporary. Mm-hmm. And it all goes back to accurate knowledge. Because if you are in severe pain and you're freaking out because you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is going to be forever. I don't know what to do. And I've got no life now and I'm never going to have a life. And, you know, forget the idea of relationship, marriage, kids, job, any of that stuff. I am just bedbound and nothing is right. Well, you can either do that or you can lay in bed where you may be at this point in your journey. And try to call a friend, not to talk about the pain, but to hear a funny story. What's going on with them? You can visualize. You can start to envision the life that you know is available. And when I say know is available, that comes from accurate knowledge that this is the only thing that's causing my pain, and my body's already okay. I just got to work on teaching the brain. And so there are ways that we can, even in deep symptoms, we can still change our thoughts, we can change our focus, we can change our approach, our attitude and mindset.
Yeah,
we can change how we respond to the pain. You can roll around crying in pain in full-on despair, or you can kind of breathe through it and say, this is where I am now, but it's not forever. And believe it or not, the brain listens.
Yeah,
because I hear people all the time saying that, you know, I had some really big, colorful day, but I was able to stay calm. I stayed away from freaking out. I was able to reassure myself and things settled down before I knew it. Right. Today's video was all about, you know, don't give up the day, which means if you wake up with a lot of significant symptoms, don't give up the day. That's where you are now. But, and the gentleman actually suggested this and he says, I had a problem. I woke up with severe symptoms, but I decided I'm going to get up and go for a walk in the woods. Then I met with some friends. He goes, by the evening, I was feeling much better. So he didn't give up the day laying in bed, catastrophizing that, oh God, it started out bad. So the rest of the day is going to be bad.
Right.
And so it's tough to, when you're deep in the symptoms, it's tough to believe it. It's tough to reassure yourself, but it is infinitely doable. And the alternative of fearing and catastrophizing doesn't move you forward and it's not fun emotionally or mentally. So why not try to tell yourself a different story?
Yeah.
Give yourself a little mental, emotional boost first. And I've said it many times, the mindset has to shift first.
Yeah.
If you're waiting for symptoms to start reducing before you actually believe this and start to say, I'm going to be okay, you've got it reversed.
Right. Because
the brain's not going to turn off the symptoms until the mind actually starts to believe that that's possible and that the symptoms aren't needed. This is a brain game. We're trying to pick the conscious brain and convince the subconscious that's controlling it all that we're actually okay.
Right.
We don't do that by catastrophizing.
No, we don't.
And I'm not saying this is easy.
Right.
But when you look at it, perceived danger is the, what turns it on and keeps it on. Safety is the solution.
Yeah. And how can you encourage someone to like not see that also as like work? Because I think for me, sometimes I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, and I know it's misinformation, but I'm like, I know that I'm like, I'm in a season of a lot of change and, you know, don't know what's happening in the future. And so I'm having lots of sensations popping up constantly all the time. And while I know, and I know why, it's like, I it also sometimes is like, ugh, I'm not doing enough like work to make sure my brain knows I'm safe or something. Like that's where I can go sometimes. And then I want to, and then I just don't want to do it. Cause I'm like, ugh, it's just more work, you know?
Yeah. So I don't like the word work.
Yeah.
You know, I always
not
joke
a good word.
Work is a four-letter word, you know, and so do the work, do the work.
Yeah.
Look, we all have the same number of hours and minutes in the day.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take any extra time to calmly reassure yourself, like, all right, Whitney, we're going to be good. You know, things are colorful, but I got a lot of stuff going on in my life and a bit stressed out. But hey, brain. My body's fine. I'm a young, fit, healthy woman. I don't need these symptoms. There's mm-hmm. there's no real danger going on. It's just perceived. We don't have to interpret stress to mean symptoms are needed. It doesn't take you any longer to do that than laying in bed going, oh, this is awful. I don't want to do the work. Maybe I need to do the work. Do I need to do the work? Ah, this is too much work.
Uh-huh. Totally.
Choose. One is going to lead you towards a brain that's going to slowly calm down. And the other one's going to say, hey, brain, we're in danger. Stay vigilant. Oh, my God, we got a problem.
Right.
Does that work, or is it just being kind to yourself and doing things that are helpful? Why is doing something that makes you feel better emotionally, physically, and mentally considered work?
Right.
To me, that doesn't make sense. Work, you know what work is?
Yeah.
Sitting down journaling about childhood for 3 hours a week.
Absolutely.
That's work to me. Reassuring yourself. Oh, just felt a pain. It's all right, Dan. You're going to be good. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to shift my focus to I've got something to do. You wake up with a migraine. Okay. It's not work. You don't have to like pause and say, oh, crap, I got to get 2 hours of journaling in before the podcast. It should be like, oh, come on, brain. You're overreacting. There's nothing about a podcast that's dangerous that should cause you to turn on a migraine.
Right.
Or the vertigo, or the dizziness, or the stomach upset, or like clarity. Hey, brain.
Yeah.
We're good.
Right.
And if you want the brain to believe that you are safe, we want to think, act, and behave as if that's true. If we're running around from podcast to video to book to book to process to therapist to all that's doing is run around saying, I got a big problem and I haven't figured it out yet, so I need to work harder. And your brain's going, all right, I'm paying attention. Let's keep it going. So I'm going to really try to impress on you, Whitney. There's nothing to fix. Sometimes we get better when we do less, when we start to live more. Fix less, live more.
Fix less, live more. That's good. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And you have mentioned, I believe the term that you've used is predictive coding. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Like if I'm going to tell myself it's going to be painful, then it'll most likely be painful. Kind of like
that's what Dr. Schubner.
Or you say the stories we tell. Okay.
Dr. Schubner taught me that term. Predictive coding basically means if you expect it to hurt when you get up from the couch and stretch your back out, it's going to hurt. In my case, I expected it to hurt when I would bend over. Why? Because that was the movement that brought on every acute onset of pain. I might have a mild level, but anytime it really went, ouch, it was bending over. So what did my back or brain do every time I'd go to bend over? It would give me a certain amount of pain to make sure I was careful so I didn't hurt myself. And so predictive coding just means if you expect something, your brain can literally create it out of thin air. So I will also encourage you to tell yourself a different story that your brain used to create migraines on podcast days, but it no longer does. There's no reason for it because a podcast is more dangerous and there's no reason for a migraine because you're good at it and it's not dangerous in any way, shape, or form.
So
telling yourself different stories is essentially a way to set different expectations.
Yeah, that's good. That is really good.
That's why I talk a lot about, well, what are your stories?
What are your stories? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, because those mean a lot to us, our stories. They mean a lot to us.
We're always storytelling in our head. Everything from, oh, I'm running late. My boss is going to be upset. I better get hurrying up, but I hurt right now. And, oh, this day's going to be really awful because last time I was late, my pain just really ramped up and I got stuck in traffic and I was shifting in my seat and story. And, so I don't know. Tell different stories.
Tell different stories. Stories that
support you and lift you up as opposed to say, you're broken, you're screwed up, and you're not doing enough work. So that's why you're hurting. You're not doing enough.
Yeah, no, it is. And it, when you're talking about like, why do we choose to, it feels like work when we, you know, kind of love on ourselves or something. I wonder though, if it's because like, we're so used to the guilt and the like shaming ourselves first piece that may could reassurance sometimes feel dangerous to our brain and nervous system because it's so used to like, oh, you did this wrong. How dare you mess up? Can that ever happen?
Possible. Mm-hmm. Possible. It certainly feels foreign to us.
Yeah.
And it feels fake.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to convince yourself that you're okay, mm-hmm. you're a good person, you're fit, you're healthy, there's nothing wrong with you, you're not broken, mm-hmm. but you've mm-hmm. just spent potentially years suffering in pain and going right. from doctor to doctor and psychologist to therapist to this medication, that medication, treatment, and everybody's mm-hmm. going, yep, yeah, you're pretty well broken. Mm-hmm. And now you're trying to tell yourself that, no, I'm safe, I'm good. Your brain's going, right. wait, time out, what are you saying?
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
And it takes a while. Intellectually, so many people get it. And I have people say all the time, Dan, I understand. I know it's TMS. I know it's mind body. Mm-hmm. Why won't my body stop hurting?
Yeah.
Intellectual knowledge is not enough. That's like me saying, and hurt or back, mm-hmm. stop hurting. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter. It's not mm-hmm. a conscious thing. We can influence whether or not the brain turns on or keeps the pain going based on how we respond to the symptoms, how we mm-hmm. think about them, what we believe about them. Look, if you mm-hmm. believe that your body's a problem, your brain's not shutting off the pain.
Right.
If you think it's hormones or diet or gut biome or brain chemistry, oh, I got a mm-hmm. brain chemistry imbalance, that's why I have migraines. And if you believe right. any of that stuff, your brain's going to go, oh, no. We don't have perfect brain chemistry, mm-hmm. you know? And so I have the belief that the body always knows what to do.
Yeah.
If we get out of the way.
Right.
If yeah. we stop trying to fix it, if we stop trying to convince yeah. ourselves that, you know, I've yeah. got all these food sensitivities and therefore I need the perfect gut bio. Look, maybe it's so screwed up because we're mucking with it too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eat a reasonably yeah. nutrition diet. It doesn't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Eat a reasonable diet. Move your body.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, that's good enough for most people to lead a very healthy, fit life.
Mm-hmm.
But we yeah. overcomplicate it with all this fixing activity.
We do.
And the minute we get a symptom in the, you know, we start figuring, I got to fix it. So what do I have mm-hmm. to do? Supplements and mm-hmm. diets and meditations and breath work and journaling and therapy. And
mm-hmm.
how about just teaching your brain that right now you're actually okay?
Yeah.
Nothing bad going on. Even if you have a migraine right this minute, you can literally mm-hmm. say to your brain, shh, mm-hmm. what gives? Look around.
Yeah.
I'm safe
yeah.
in the house. There's nothing wrong. I'm mm-hmm. talking to somebody. Nothing bad's going on. I'm not worried mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. But even if you say those things, but you are behaving in such a way that says, oh no, I've got to run into the bedroom. I've got to turn off the lights, pull the shades. And I've got to sit in the dark mm-hmm. and I've got to, you know, I'm going to mm-hmm. cry for the next 3 hours as this wave mm-hmm. of pain goes over me.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying the correct things intellectually, but what you're showing your brain is I'm terrified.
Yeah. Right.
And it's not easy to overcome fear of pain because nobody likes it. Nobody likes mm-hmm. it. But
no.
once you truly understand and accept that it's the brain mm-hmm. just perceiving mm-hmm. danger, and it's a false mm-hmm. alarm,
mm-hmm.
it's easier. I didn't say it's easy, but it's easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
To teach the brain that I'm going to be okay.
Mm.
This is not a big problem to solve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Mm. I know you got some other
yeah.
questions. I
yeah,
think
you
ramble
no.
a little bit.
No, it's good. Ramble away. It's all very, very good stuff. Is there a level or a threshold that you would say, I think sometimes, and this is do a question for my benefit. Like finding a way to, sometimes it's like, you know, you're in pain and you know, you're feeling it, but it's just like, I got this. I'm going to get the day. And then there's other times where it's like, you kind of just, wave the white flag. And it's like, you know what? I just, today is bed. Like, is that communicating the wrong thing to my body? Sometimes I try and think like, you know, what could be the most loving thing for me today? You know, and I'll get out and I'll go and try and have the day. And it's like, whoa, this is not happening. So it's trying to come from a place of love and be like, you know what, we're just going to go home and we're going to chill and that's fine. Instead of making it this, like, you know, because I just can't do it and all of this.
Well, if you're going to rest, sometimes that's the right next step to take.
Okay.
If your symptoms are really kicking your butt,
yeah,
it's okay to give yourself a little, cut yourself some slack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I liked what Alan Gordon says in his book. He's like, you know, if your pain is really severe, getting into a comfortable position and mm-hmm. treating yourself with kindness is the right next step. Because if you try to push through it, which is what a lot of people assume I'm saying, you know, you're saying, go live your life, be indifferent. So they're like, oh, you're telling me to push through it.
Right.
No, I didn't really say push through it. I don't believe in self-torture to get better, because that's what Alan Gordon calls a setback, because you try to push through it and it gets even worse.
Yeah.
And then all we've done is confirm the brain's belief that something bad was happening and you didn't listen to the warning. So the warning got louder. The reason, if we push through it from a place of fear, the reason the pain gets more significant or other symptoms get more significant is because your brain's going, why aren't you listening to me? I'm perceiving danger and you're just saying, I'm going to tough it out.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to resume activity, there's a good way to do it. You can kind of visualize and expect the best. Tell yourself a story that, oh, you got to go to the grocery store and it's not going to be a disaster. I'm not going to need to call 911 to pick me up off of the floor. Right?
Yeah.
What's the story you're telling yourself? What are the expectations? Because if you're expecting the worst, the brain's going to go, stop it. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there a threshold? I think it's use your intuition. And also, you know, let your fear be your guide. If you're terrified to go out and go meet up with some friends because you're just terrified because the last time you did it, it went awful. Probably not going to go great. But if you're coming from a place of clarity and certainty that this is all mind-body stuff, there's nothing wrong with me. And if symptoms kick up a little bit while I'm out and about, if that happens, I know how I'm going to respond to that. But if you're out and about and symptoms start to tick up a little bit, and you freak out and you panic, you start judging yourself. I knew I shouldn't have gone out. This was stupid. Now I'm going to be suffering. I'm going to pay for it for 3 days. And all you're doing is feeding the perception that bad stuff's going on. So it all comes down to clarity. I've been talking a lot lately about building a solid foundation, understanding intellectually what this is.
Yeah.
Accepting that that's what's going on when you literally go, holy crap, I'm really okay. And that's not exactly, you know, an overnight step.
Right.
Part of the journey is to convince yourself that that's truly the case. Because I don't know how many times people will say to me, but damn, it really hurts. How can I believe it's created by the brain?
Right. Right.
It hurts so bad. I go, I know. Been there, done that. But in my case, 13 years of it was always TMS. And what I've done the past 12, going on 13 years, I feel better at 57 than I did in my 30s.
That's awesome. Yeah. Do you feel the same about like pain medication when it comes to like when to find rest and stuff like that?
Yeah, my stance on medication is I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you what to do and what not to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's helping, view it not as a cure, not as a fix. View it as an act of self-kindness. Mm-hmm. And I like the stance that says, take it until you don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. If it's helpful. Plenty
yeah.
of people say, I'm taking this medicine. I don't like taking it. It doesn't help me anyway. Okay. Right. So in that case, you probably don't want to take it. Mm-hmm. Use your discretion. Talk to your doctor. If it's mm-hmm. not helping you, why put chemicals into your body?
Mm-hmm.
If
yeah.
it is giving you a benefit and that allows you to be a little bit more at ease with your life and where you are on this journey,
mm-hmm.
don't judge yourself harshly.
Yeah.
Do it as an act of self-kindness. I deserve a little bit of relief it gives me, so I'm going to take
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But just be clear, this is not a cure. Mm-hmm. It's an act of self-kindness, so I'm going to give myself a little bit of a break. I'm going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't do that to the exclusion of the messages of safety. Because some people will be just like, I'm just going to pop a pill and chill out.
Yeah.
They don't learn anything that way. They're not teaching
right.
their subconscious, I'm okay. All they're doing mm-hmm. is saying, oh, thank goodness this pill still works.
Right.
You still want to do the TMS approach, the mind-body
mm-hmm.
approach, teaching mm-hmm. yourself that you're actually okay
mm-hmm.
and just view it as this is an act of safety or an act mm-hmm. of self-kindness, excuse me.
Mm. Yeah, that's good because I have a lot of friends and I talk about so much so who have, you know, experienced a lot of healing as well and will be like, oh, I had to take Advil and I feel like I failed and all that stuff. And it's like,
stop judging.
No. Yeah.
Stop judging. You know, if you got a wicked yeah. headache and a couple of Advil is going to knock it out in 30 minutes,
yeah.
by all means,
mm-hmm.
do it.
Mm-hmm.
What's worse? Saying, I need to be strong and figure this out myself and then have a
right.
headache for 16 hours? Who the heck
mm-hmm.
wants to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not the cure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's self-kindness. So that's
mm-hmm.
meditation. What else?
Yeah. That's good. So you talk a lot about, I think, with people that you coach to not talk about the symptoms or, like you were telling me, the labeling. Can you expand a little bit on that about why? Because I imagine it's also hard when your whole identity has been, I have this, I struggle with this, I'm feeling this.
Mm-hmm.
So then to not talk about sensations, but also not want, this was me, not want people to think that I'm okay, which I know is its own thing as well, right? I didn't want to lose like the care and maybe even the sympathy from people, but I also knew like, okay, I gotta stop saying I'm, you know, I feel this or I have this or
yeah.
you know, that struggle.
So if you have compassionate friends and family who really
mm-hmm.
care about you,
mm-hmm.
they're always going to ask you, hey, how are you doing, Whitney?
Right.
How are you feeling today?
Right.
How are you feeling?
Right.
Can I do anything for you? What's going on? Oh,
mm-hmm.
tough day? Relax.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. Don't worry about it. Right. And that's wonderful that you have that level of support.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You don't want to. Well, here, let's go back to square one. Why do I suggest you not talk about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, pain happens. And the more fear and attention we give it, the more likely it is to become chronic or persistent.
Mm-hmm.
Uses a mechanism called neuroplasticity, which is the brain wiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if the brain wiring is what is keeping it going because we've feared the symptoms and we've given them a lot of attention, talking about the symptoms keeps on using those wires. It's going to keep them connected.
Mm-hmm.
My analogy there was in high school, I took 2 years of Spanish and needed to learn Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
When I was done, what did I do with Spanish? Don't need that. Focus on
right.
college, music, and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And all on its own, my brain learned Spanish is not important. It reallocated mm-hmm. those connections to other things that I was learning.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were talking about your symptoms all day long, even
mm-hmm.
from a compassionate, loving standpoint with friends or family,
yeah,
you're using it. That would have been like me, you know, I don't even want to say how many years later after high school, because I'm getting old. But, you know, that would be like me saying, how come I still know Spanish? Darn it.
Mm.
And I've been speaking the language every day for the past several
right.
decades.
Yeah.
If you really want your pain to let go, give it as little attention as possible. That's tough to do when
mm-hmm.
you are terrified of what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I always bring it back to the foundational knowledge of what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, TMS, perceived danger pain, means your body's actually okay. Your brain just doesn't know it yet. So why talk about something that ensures that it's the speaking of it all the time will keep it persistent? Right? So it's challenging. I know you're interested in this this concept, but there's no need to talk about it every day with everybody who's willing to listen to you. And I don't want them to think I'm okay. Why? Do you want the sympathy or do you want to get better?
Right.
And that's a tough question to ask yourself, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think you use the word identity. This is who I am. I'm the sick one. Right.
Yep.
And I will tell you just from firsthand experience, I was the guy in the neighborhood with back pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd be a little block party, people hanging out, you know, and I was the guy with back pain. I'd be the one either sitting on the curb or laying on the grass or had to bring a chair with me while everybody's standing up. It wasn't fun. And I can tell you that life without symptoms. Fantastic. Give up the need for the sympathy and understanding. I want people to understand what I'm going through. Why?
Right. Yeah.
It's counterproductive. I really believe it is. I'm not suggesting it's not nice to have caring people careful.
Right. Right.
It's wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
For some people, when they're sick, that's the only time we got attention from others. Because when we weren't sick, nobody paid attention to us. And I am not suggesting in any way that you or other people use symptoms as a way of getting attention consciously. It's not like manipulative. It's not the secondary benefit. But really ask yourself, what would life look like without all these symptoms?
Yeah.
Without talking about them, without fixing them, without dedicating my life to figuring it out. What would life look like? What would I do with myself if I didn't have to fix myself all the time? And if your answer to that is, I have no clue, you might want to start thinking about that and start designing a future that actually is compelling more so than fixing yourself. Right? And you know, I'm saying try to have some fun. People are like, fun. I'll have fun when my pain's gone. Well, maybe having some fun would help it leave.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm one of those people for sure. Fun has not, has never been a priority, but yeah, so I'm trying. How do you suggest people navigate it then with family or friends or, like, are you suggesting you say, my brain is perceiving, you know, this time is a dangerous time, or just.
Yeah, you can basically coach the people around you. I love you. I know you're asking about me because you care. And I totally love you for that. You're awesome. I appreciate that. But what I'm learning is the more I talk about it, the longer it sticks around. And so I am making a commitment to myself not to speak about it. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm good. It just means I don't want to talk about it anymore because it doesn't help me to talk about it. So please, I had to coach my family, my wife at the time, my mom, stop asking me. And if somebody would ask me, I would immediately go, I'm good. How are you? What's going on? Hey, tell me something that's new in your life. I'd get off the subject because it never helps. Talk about it. Look, it might make you feel good to have a sympathetic ear. I'm not saying you can never do it, but please. If you're talking about your symptoms all day long, every day, you know, that's probably not a productive use of your time, productive use of these brain wires that you want to let go. You don't have to become a brain rewiring specialist. The brain knows what to do. Just focus on what you want, not what you're trying to get rid of.
Yeah, that's really good. Because I think a lot, at least for me, thinking towards the future wasn't really something, you know, I was very stuck in the day to day because I was like, why am I going to think about a future or make goals or whatever? Because it's probably going to fall through anyway. So I'm just
Well, that's telling yourself different stories.
Yeah, totally.
Because if you say, well, why would I think about feeling better when I'm feeling like crap? You're basically choosing to feel like crap. And I'm not saying that's your fault or
right
intentionally what you were doing, but there's a lot of managing our expectations and the fear that, well, I don't want to expect to get better because if it doesn't happen, I'm going to be even more disappointed. I'm already full of despair because this happened in the first place. And look at all the years I've lost and, you know, why would I possibly want to get my hopes up? Well, because it's mind-body. Your body's okay. Your brain's just perceiving danger. So why would you want to get your hopes up? Because that's how you can get out of this mess.
Right, right. Yeah.
Right? And so you got to teach your brain that you're actually okay. And we don't do that by saying, I'm just going to sit in my pain and suffer. Okay. That's not going to work so well. Good luck with that approach. We want to start to think, act, and behave as if we are okay within limits that you currently have based on your physical limits. I'm not telling you to go run a marathon tomorrow because your brain would object and it would create symptoms because it would perceive that to be a dangerous activity. So there's ways of easing into it with visualization, graded or gradual exposure. And here's the key to that process. You know, Alan Gordon talks about pain reprocessing therapy. It's kind of what he talks about, visualization, gradual exposure. But the one thing that I tack onto that is if the symptoms show up, choose your response. You can either freak out and go, damn it, I knew that was a problem. I did too much. And you just confirmed that the activity you were just trying to teach your brain is safe. You just confirmed by freaking out when the symptoms showed up that it was dangerous. As opposed to, no, I'm actually okay. Right?
Yeah.
People going for a walk, they'd be like, I can walk for 22 minutes, but if I go over that, then it, I know I'm going to hit, I'm going to hurt. Predictive coding, they expect it. They're counting the minutes. And so if it hurts, you can actually look at that and go, that's pretty humorous. Pretty funny because walking 23 minutes is not any more dangerous than walking 22. And if you can walk 22 without much significant pain, then you can walk without much significant pain. You've got these artificial barriers and beliefs and, you know, stories in your head that just say, I've got limits and I can't beat that. What else?
Yeah,
no, well, to keep it to an hour, but I don't have a schedule, so if you got more questions, we'll keep rambling.
Well, I mean, okay. So I guess when in some of my case, you know, most of my symptoms are gone except for the throat pain. And so I know that there is, I have probably more of an expectation or a higher, there's probably still some disbelief that it's fully mind-body, like, you know, had every type of
scope. So here's my take. When you get rid of a lot of stuff but you still have like one sticky symptom, it's because that sticky symptom either holds a place of doubt or more fear, because either that symptom's been around longest or has been one of the most troublesome. Because hey, throat pain's like speaking, eating, drinking, pretty significant. It's pretty important. And so anytime there's a sticky symptom, I would absolutely just kind of say, yeah, I'm definitely more afraid of that than I was of the body aches that I knew were mind body, as opposed to this, where every time I swallow, I feel like I'm choking. Well, that's scarier, isn't it? So it may take a little bit more convincing to teach the subconscious that this is really not bad. Hardeep, watch his success story again. He literally would take a walk speaking out loud to speak more to teach his brain that it wasn't harmful or dangerous. And this is a guy who's a public speaker. And look at you, you're doing podcasts, so you are speaking. I don't know if speaking's the issue or swallowing's the issue or
what's singing. Singing. So I started background singing, touring the world, singing with some of the most major artists in the world, you know, got into that whole thing, and then got home from tour, got sick, you know, thought I was sick. And that kind of is when the whole journey started. And so,
so what does this represent to you?
Oh, everything, everything.
You're a skier professionally.
Yep.
Why do you think it holds the biggest place of fear? Of course.
Because it means the most. Yeah. It's my livelihood. It's my, and he talked about that, like
sticking around.
Yes. So
any amount of doubt, no, you didn't blow your, you know, throat out singing. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't
work
it too much. I mean, there's people who sing into their 80s and 90s.
Right.
Get clear. This is no different than everything else that you've been able to overcome. The only difference is that the consequences of it not going away
are
much bigger and scarier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for you to get clear that this is nothing else.
Because
that clarity is what you're going to be able to use to dial down the fear. And I'm going to encourage you to start daydreaming about singing again. Mm-hmm. Whether it be, you know, in a little, with that nice microphone, right, going into a recording in your laptop, or getting back on tour, or singing with a local band. But maybe start singing in your house by yourself in the shower. Start practicing singing to teach yourself that it's really not dangerous. Now your brain may say, what are you doing? Stop it. And increase symptoms. Because if you've said that and that's what happened, you go, oh, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah. Right.
But
well, so I still sing. I still sing because I don't know what else I'm good at. So it's how I make money. You know, but it, when you talk about find things that are fun, you know, singing is not fun for me. It's work. It's how I make a living, you know, like it's,
But it's, what if you changed your story that I love singing and it's not work and this is my joy. It's my connection with the universe. It's just, this is my thing. This is where I feel at home. It's only become work since it's hurt. You used to love it, didn't you?
Yeah, for sure.
No, change your story, rewrite a different one. Just like Hardeep.
You're right.
A public speaker. He would go up there and he'd speak for an hour and every word hurt. But he had to teach himself and he had to convince himself that this is my joy, this is my career, it's my passion, and there's no reason for me to hurt.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, cause when you were talking about earlier, like, telling people to imagine their lives, you know, pain-free, that actually used to really freak me out. Like, I think it, thinking of a pain-free life was actually very scary.
Why?
And, because I had just, my entire life existed around my pain. And so I was like, I don't even know who I am without it. I don't know. What if I don't actually like singing? Like, you know, I just, I don't know. Healed was really scary to me. Because I even, you know, I even would tell myself, I would tell my friends, like, if I still had, if I had to be in a wheelchair, but I could sing and have no throat pain, I'd be fine. I wouldn't need, I wouldn't worry about being healed. Like, as long as I had my voice. So, you know, yeah, it's all that.
My consequences there. So the perceived,
for sure.
The perceived danger around your throat pain is astronomically high.
Definitely. It is very high. Yes.
So I'm going to really encourage you to get more comfortable with this vision that says, wait, you can live pain-free and still be, you know, cool, badass woman who sings great, runs a cool podcast and does neat things in her life and has fun. Fun. Yeah. You'll probably start laughing again when you start to realize, you know, that, that you're not broken.
Yeah.
You can get your life back for sure. You can absolutely get your life back.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be around this struggle.
It doesn't have to. Yeah. No, you're right. It doesn't have to. It doesn't have to be my identity. It's just, it's, it almost feels, and I shouldn't say this, but like, it just feels second nature. And so I know I need to definitely.
How long have you been dealing with this?
8 years.
And how old are you?
34.
So yeah, since your 20s.
Yeah.
But here's the deal.
We can learn.
Here's the deal. You were probably singing a heck of a lot up until you were 26 when this stuff happened.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a throat problem.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. Symptoms took over. It became really scary. It freaked you out.
Mm-hmm.
And it became all-consuming. And where in the past 8 years have you discovered this mind-body stuff? How long
ago? 3 years ago.
So I'm going to really encourage you to focus more on how can I feel safer? And one of the things I like to do is we experience the world emotionally, physically, mentally. Some people have a spiritual state as well.
Mm-hmm.
But let's stick with the first three, emotional, physical, mental.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how we experience the world, whether we're a year old, 90 years old, or in between, if we all experience the world emotionally, physically, mentally, to me, it stands to reason that if you can feel safer in all three of those areas, the whole system's going to start settling down.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have to do therapy and dig up your childhood traumas? No.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to teach your brain that feeling emotions are safe. Your right now emotions. If somebody really pisses you off, you should be able to feel it without your brain going, oh no, stop, here's some pain.
Right.
So how do we do that? By actually feeling the emotions. Mm-hmm. How do you teach your brain that you're safe physically?
Mm-hmm.
Being in this posture with your shoulders wanting to hang out with your earlobes, tight, tense, and breathing shallow, the brain has no choice but to perceive danger.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you teach safety physically? Relaxed body.
Mm-hmm.
Let the shoulders drop. Breathe comfortably. Mm-hmm. That's not breath work. It's just let me relax my body and get out of this tight, clenched, tight jaw. Everything is
very
and relax, because when you do that, you're in a relaxed body. You're going to breathe naturally. Mm-hmm. And at that point, your brain has no choice but to perceive what? Safety. And that goes directly to the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you teach your brain that you're safe mentally? Well, you know, a lot of people believe every thought they have.
Right.
We don't have to believe our negative, fearful, catastrophic, my life is nothing without my pain, because who am I? That's all just BS. It's just brain noise. We don't need to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you stop taking your own thinking so seriously and feeling like you have to act on every negative thought you have, you actually start to have fewer and fewer negative thoughts. So now we've just had given you very subtle, tiny things. Notice your emotional state. Feel your emotions. Why? Feels good. Teaches the brain that they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Notice your physical state. If you're tight and tense, breathing shallow, relax. Allow natural breathing. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Feels good. Teaches your brain it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And mentally, if you notice your mental state is spinning with this fearful, oh no, my life is over, you know, life sucks, I'm 34 and I'm never going to have a future, I won't be able to sing again, and how am I going to make money? Mm-hmm. You can go, shh, I don't need to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm actually okay. Because I know what this mind-body is, and I know that my voice is okay, my throat is okay. Nothing physical. You've probably been scoped 18 different ways.
Yep.
Taken every supplement known to man and, you know, dietary changes and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So then the last two pieces is how do you respond when you feel the symptoms?
Mm-hmm.
Is it typically a fear response? Oh, no. It's just increasing. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can shift that to go,
yeah.
My brain's just perceiving danger. Hey, brain, cut it out. Shh, we're good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the approach I'd like you to take.
Right.
You know, indifference is something I talk about a lot. But that's hard to get to if you've spent 8 years freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go from freak out to indifference. The middle ground is calm reassurance.
Mm.
Whitney, it's okay. We know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. We know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You're all right. And the symptoms jumped, but the only reason they jumped is because your brain is perceiving danger, because you were just with some friends and you were in a loud bar and, you know, you had to speak louder and your brain was like, oh, what are you doing? Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I'm not saying you go out drinking, but
yeah.
You get the point. So the brain perceives danger, symptoms go up. And if you freak out, you've basically just said to the brain, you're right, that was dangerous, as opposed to going, I'm having a good time. There's nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You would sing full out on stage.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason that speaking for a while is going to be dangerous.
Right.
Last thing is shifting your attention back towards doing regular things, normal things.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging. I didn't say any of this was easy, but the concept is simple.
Yeah.
The perception of danger is what's driving all this.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching the brain that you're actually safe is the solution, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's about as simple as I can make it.
Yeah.
There's so many TMS protocols and practices and fixes and approaches and inner child work and all this stuff. It's like overcomplicating it.
Mm-hmm.
Brain retraining stuff, overcomplicating it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the answer is? Sing more, and if it hurts, call it out for exactly what it is. Brain perceiving danger, not physical, structural. I just hurt myself because I hit a high note too loud. It has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Sing more. If it hurts, remain calm. Teach your brain. We're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do it again. Rinse, you know, what do they say on the back of the shampoo bottle? Lather, rinse, repeat.
Right. Yeah.
And as long as you're responding to symptoms in a calm, reassuring way, ideally moving towards indifference, your brain will eventually, you know, get the message and start to dial things down.
Yeah, that's good. That's helpful. Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really good. So do you suggest people start out with coaching, or do you think like is doing it with somebody helpful? Or I know you kind of did it on your own, but you also talked to, you know, a couple key guys that helped you kind of refine your process.
Well, when I was going through it myself with my own pain, the only professional help I got was sending a picture to Dr. Schubner and saying, look how crooked I am. And he came back and says, Dan, you're not in pain because you're crooked. You're crooked because you've been in pain. And that was like, okay, I don't have to worry about the crookedness. But I did not have therapy, professional help. I never saw Sarno, even though I only lived, you know, a few hours from New York City. I probably could have, but never pursued it. So I had his books, you know, there's a couple other books that came out towards the end of the journey. Yeah. I've had other influences since then as I've sought to learn more and more about it. As far as what to recommend, at minimum, people can watch my daily videos. It's free daily coaching. You were asking what are messages of safety. Watching a 6 to 8 minute video over coffee that says, hey, you're going to be okay. You can do this. It's just, this is what's going on. This is what we do, and this is how it works. Look at all the people getting better. So at minimum, do that.
Yeah.
You can go to dansyoutube.com. That'll bring you right to my channel. You'll get all the videos in reverse chronological order. At minimum, do that, because there's plenty of people around the globe emailing me, messaging me, saying they got better just by watching the daily videos. Some people don't even speak English. They just do the closed captions, translate it into their language. They're still getting the message and getting better.
Yeah, that's awesome.
If people want coaching, currently I'm really focusing on the group because I can help more people that way. You get more support, the same information, weekly group coaching calls as opposed to a one-on-one call that happens once. And I don't have time in my schedule to work with somebody over and over and over again. You don't need to, but the group is the way to go. So painfreeyou.com, click on the Getting Help menu at the top. There's group information. The one-on-one coaching right now is on hold. Just because the rest of the year is full, and I'm also dealing with my mom who's sick. So,
Okay. Yeah. And I'll definitely link all of that so people can find you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well, I know so many will find this helpful.
This was kind of a cool podcast.
I found it helpful.
This was kind of a cool podcast because it was, not just you inquiring because you're interested, but it also turned into a little bit of coaching.
I know. Cool. I know. I do appreciate it. Definitely.
That's cool. Very
definitely.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dan. Appreciate you.
Like what you hear so far? Click the subscribe button and give me a rating and review. And let's keep this conversation going. You can find me on social media at Whitney Wood Music. You can find any of my latest singles out anywhere that you stream or purchase music under Whitney Wood, as well as my latest passion project. It's a kids EP called BB and Bubba. I'll have the links below so you can find them. Have a great week, everybody.